What a guest we've got on, an absolute belter. Stan the man. Stan, thanks very much for coming on.
Time out, pleasure. Pleasure, buddy.
I need to say, mate, you're looking absolutely gorgeous.
I'm getting there. I've been training a bit, to be honest. Exercising. So, still enjoying it.
You're looking great. I thought you were going to say I was looking great.
Well, you always look great. You know that.
We're the same, mate. Curls get the gunnels, look.
No, you can't. You don't put my hair, your haircut with mine, so we'll leave it out.
I need to tell you something. You're only my second favourite Stan to ever play for Celtic.
Who's your first?
Varga.
Stan. No, you can't put Stan in front of me.
No, come on. You were the man. Growing up, looked up to you, mate. Really did.
Thank you. Great player,
top man as well.
Thank you.
And we've got your charity game coming up. You want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, obviously, I hope it's going to be another emotional game. I had one in 2013. It was really emotional. It was completely different than, you know, a normal game. After all my battles and my personal battle as well, you know, it was a very emotional and very exciting game for everybody in the ground, especially for me and my family. And I hope that this one will be another special one. I will give the world to see what is Celtic all about.
I watched that last game and actually getting tears on the arm standing up watching you walking around the pitch. I mean, is it only Celtic fans that could possibly do that for a charity game?
That's why we chose the Celtic Park again, because we know how special it is. You know, we're doing it with James Milne. He's played here before, but he's played in a competitive game. He's never done a charity game before. And, you know, I told him what it's all about. I spoke about my previous game, the atmosphere, people being, you know, around and support a good cause. And, you know, he goes straight away, I'm happy to do it, let's do it. And, you know, we're bringing some good stars, you know, ex-players, current players, actors, singers. So we're all looking forward to it. And it's very difficult, you know, to put a game of this magnitude is big. But, you know, with partnership with the Celtic Foundation, you know, they've done a great job as well, you know, and being part of it as well and having the chance to do the game here at Celtic Park is incredible.
You talked about the names that are playing there, some big names. Give us throw a couple of names there.
Well, we've got quite a lot, you know. Henrik is coming back
to the father,
you know him. Uh-huh. You know how important it is. Lubo is playing, Luis Garcia is playing, Guy Scamendieta.
Wow.
Christo Stoichkov, one of my...
Stoichkov playing, yeah? I'm coming.
Johan Mjalby, Jos Vogar.
You need defenders.
But, you know, James is announcing his team as well, soon. I'll let him do that.
So you've got a few big names coming,
have you? Yeah, you've got a few ex and current players as well. So it's a good mix-up, but, you know, we don't need to forget what it's all about and what difference the funds and, you know, the game will make for people battling cancer.
Everyone get yourself along, I'm telling you, I'll be there as well, so another reason to come.
Get a ticket, be there.
And your own foundation as well, Stan, the golf days, going great?
Yeah, we've managed to become an annual event for us. It's been great, like I say, everybody I've asked to be part of it, and, you know, celebrities and players, current ex-players, you know, they've never said no.
Right.
They've been, you know, having help is the big thing. Because organising events like that is very difficult, you know. You need to ask people to dedicate their time, you know, to get away from the families, to be part of it, to support it. And it's been great. It's been a hard work. Tell you what, it's been a hard work, but me and my wife, we dedicated, you know, after our battle, our personal battle, you know, we dedicated our time there, and we know what difference that makes.
Talking about your personal battle there, March 2012, just take us back to the events of that.
Well, you know, being a footballer, it's a great life.
Not for me, it's not, mate. Part-timer, huh?
It's great.
Sorry for you, who's it?
Well, it's a great life, you know. Played for Celtic. I've worked really hard to, you know, to become a footballer. That was my dream, you know. I worked really hard. Moved from Bulgaria young when I was in Scotland. Had a great time at Celtic. Moved to Aston Villa down in the Premier League. Started playing well. I was a captain of the team. What could go wrong? I mean, what could go wrong?
Living the life, living a dream.
Living the life, yeah. People say, oh, you know, you should be happy. Yeah, I was happy. And all of a sudden, I had a devastating news that actually, for me, it was, I didn't know how to react. In moments like that, it's completely different. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you're going to run harder, you're going to get there, or you're going to pass the ball better, you know, you make the difference. It's completely different. it's life-threatening. Mm-hmm. My life was on the line. My family's on the line. And then you realize these little special moments, you know, all the hard work, all the dreams you had, you know, all the negative moments, all the pressure you've been under, is nothing.
No, uh-huh.
Because you've got one thing, you need to survive. And if somebody would ask me that moment, why, but you remember this problem and this negative and people, you know, always hammer you for not playing well. This was the last thing that I was thinking of.
And how bad did it get to Stan? How bad?
On people that are going through it or people that have been closer to people that are going through it, know how was it? It was a dark moment. A lot of people don't know, you know, having somebody beside you in moments like that is very important. And I've been lucky to have a great woman beside me, great family, you know. I've stopped my treatment twice, you know, as much. You know how strong I am and you know how demanding I was. You know, you still got that saying, right?
Fucking hell, boys.
Yeah. I'm still saying that Sunday, though. But it was difficult. It was difficult to put my mind what I needed to do to survive, to continue to be a father and a husband and, you know, see my kids grow up, see them play football, get married, have kids. This is a big issue for me. Nothing else. I just wanted to survive and see my family grow up and be a good family. And that was important for me. And it took a lot of fights through these 3 years, because my treatment was for 3 years. A year and 2 months was intensive chemotherapies, constantly in the hospital. Then I had another 2 years for maintenance, which I need to go every 3 months back to the hospital for a week, chemotherapies, injections. Your counts go down, go up. You still need to watch. You can't go back for your normal life. Then you start questioning yourself, what's my normal life? Do I need to go and be like that for the rest of my life? Do I need to go back to the hospital all the time, taking blood, make sure that all your counts are good? Do I go and back and enjoy everybody else, travel all the time, and, you know, being out around people? Don't forget, for a year and 2 months, I wasn't allowed to meet people. My immune system was zero. I was constantly in the hospital. I need to be away from my kids. If my kids had cough or a cold, I'm not allowed to see them. Every time they go in one room in the house, I need to make sure the window is open, or fresh air come out, and I need to go in. They're not allowed to go in. It was difficult.
Wow, no one sees that. Yeah.
Nobody sees that. Nobody sees that. And having the foundation, doing games like that, it makes a massive difference. Because we forget that people, to go through treatment, you need researchers, you need doctors, you need to make sure that you get better protocols, better treatments. To do that, you need funding. And I know how important it is, because one of these fundings helped me survive. It gave me a second chance to be alive, you know, and to still try to help other ones. You know, people say we've got our purposes in life. Maybe that's my purpose in life.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about that fight there. How important do you think that is, that fight you had as a player, as a person, to get you through the battle?
It did help me a lot, because going through the fight, through the fight, to the longest, you know, 3 years, I need to be very disciplined. What I eat, I need to take shower every day to make sure the chemo come out. I need to drink water. I need to eat, even when I was hungry, because when you go through the chemotherapies, you lose the taste of the food. You've got that metal taste that you hate it. Then you're tired. So I've slept for a month or two without remembering anything. My wife will say, sometimes I'll say I've slept for 3 hours. My wife will say, no, you've slept for 3 days. That's how tired you get. And I had my treatment university hospital in London. So my professor was brilliant. I was like his guinea pig. I always say that to him. But because I was so fit, because I was an athlete and I was so fit, he mixed a few protocols together. I've got hit really hard. But he said to me, you know, you'll be hit hard. You know, you'll get really worse before you got better. And the next thing I need to deal with, I need to say bye to football. This is something that I live for. This is something that I've dedicated my life for. I've worked so hard when I was little. I've sacrificed a lot. You know, all the hard working hours all of a sudden was taken away from me. That was the hardest bit, you know?
Was it, huh?
It is the hardest thing, because that was my dream. We all have dreams. We all follow it. We all, like I said, sacrifice. When it's taken away from you, it's painful. And it was really difficult to say no to football.
Mate, brilliant.
Thank you. Well done. Love you.
Go back to the start on football then. We'll go from Bulgaria to Celtic. When did you first hear Celtic's interest?
I was playing for CSKA 6 months before that. I was doing my national service, so I came out. I've done a pre-season with CSKA.
Wait, you were doing what? National service?
National service, a year and a half. Simon, it don't get easier. But you know, doing a national service teaches me a lot of lessons, you know, how to respect, how to be loyal, what friendship means. It does teach you that. Mm-hmm.
I can't need a bit of that.
Yeah, well, still. But that's what it teaches me. And then I come out of the national service. I've done a pre-season with CSK Sofia, and I got picked up for the national team again. And I've played against Siglan. And that's when, obviously, it's a lot of rumours who got me, you know, Jozen Venglos or John Barnes or Kenny Dalglish, who knows? Mm-hmm. But I knew that I had the interest. I knew that at that time, CSK were chasing me because I couldn't pay my phone bill, because I don't think in the last 2 months we got paid, so I couldn't pay my phone bill. So they were tracing me through other boys that were in the seaside. It was a nightmare. Yeah. So in a space of 3 days, I was back to Sofia from the seaside, travel to Glasgow. I've only took a pair of trousers and a pair of T-shirt because they said to me, 24 hours in, medical, out. We end up staying for a week here.
So were they trousers? Still got your trousers?
No, this one. That was a friend. They're framed.
They're much good more memories, expensive. Yeah.
So every 2 days, I need to wash my shirt and my trousers just to make sure I could last for a week. I remember my agent say, he kept looking. He said, should we buy you something? I said, no. They say we'll do it tomorrow, and from tomorrow to tomorrow, for a full week, for a week now. But, you know, I'm glad I made that decision. I remember when I signed, it was me and another Bulgarian player, Milan Petkov. But I think when Celtic made the offer for us, it's completely different for him. It was a different scenario. I was single. I was young. He had a family, so the money wasn't suitable for him. So he said to me, Stan, I won't be signing. Me, young boy, I just wanted to go abroad. I wanted to improve. I was chasing my dream. That wasn't bothering me. Well, it started bothering me in a couple months down the line, to put it that way. But, you know, I made that decision. Some people say, oh, it's a bold decision. Why would you take it? No word of English, different country, different culture. But you know what? It suited a little bit my football because I was a hardworking player. You know, coming to Scotland, coming to UK, you need to be a hardworking. Mm-hmm. You need to have
box
a hard...
to box, you were, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't forget, I've played the right back.
At
the start, yeah. we lost that game as well. But you know, at that time, as a young boy, I didn't think much about it. I just wanted to get out of Bulgaria. I wanted to improve. I wanted to work. I wanted to end up in an environment that I can become a better player. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I end up in a perfect place.
Was John Barnes a decision? Because he was a big name at the time, John Barnes, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was a strange decision. You know, I come out as a, you know, a midfielder, and we were doing 11-a-side a few days before that, and I was playing a midfield, and he would play me that holding role. And all of a sudden, when he named the team, obviously at that time I wasn't speaking English, I just saw my name all on that as a right back. And I'm like, oh my God, no word of English. I couldn't even speak. I didn't know what the boys were shouting. It was a nightmare. Uh-huh. I got done for the goal, and actually he done the underlap, you know, and I could, they were shouting, but I didn't know what they were shouting. They were just shouting to tuck in, you know. Mm-hmm. When you get, you know, back to it, and you know what they were shouting, because the words come, you know, they come quick through
Scotland,
the game.
And
you know, at the time, I remember that, you know, Tom Boyd was shouting, you know, tuck in. I didn't tuck in. He made that underlap, he went through it, and we lost the game, and it was a nightmare for me.
Did you say to him, like, I'm not right back?
Well, what kind of language?
Did you not have a translator or anything?
Well, obviously, a few months after that, they've actually got me a translator. But it was very difficult because John didn't really met with him or ask my opinion about it or managed to really get me in. It was like a general thing. That happened when they realized I had the financial problems, you know, the money that I was paid off. I had a massive phone bill. That's when they started kind
of. How big was this phone bill? Who were you phoning?
Well, it was my love of my life, Paulina. It was £6,000.
For a phone bill?
Phone bill, yeah.
Wow.
It was incredible. It was incredible. And bear in mind, that time I was paid not near enough or something like that. And it was hard days. Obviously, coming to a new country, new culture, paying bills, you know, it was difficult. I remember I had a friend after that, become a really friend with a guy called Brian Wilson, and you know, he helped me when he came up first day and I saw my letters. I had a pile of that much letters, you know, asking for bills and
electricity.
No, oh, if you don't speak the language, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So it was a difficult start. But you know, I've worked hard, and I remember Matt Burchill then tried to help me a lot, you know, Paul Lambert at the time, Matt Viduka, obviously, he could speak Croatian and Bulgarian Croatian, quite a similar language. Yeah. So I start to get more involved. But then John Barnes got sacked and then Martin O'Neill took over.
See, with John Barnes, was there a big divide between the players and him or her?
You could see it was a fraction between it. Because I didn't speak the language at the time. I didn't know what was said. It was a lot happening in the dressing room at half times because the team wasn't doing that well for the players they had. A lot of people expected that they'll be better than Rangers, you know. But it was a lot happening in the dressing room, and I could see that. But me, probably, you know what, not speaking the language and being left out of it maybe worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't really see the real problems. For me, when Martin took out, it was a brand new start for me.
Right.
And I didn't really associate it with John Barnes at the time that I had. But then it's another problem. Then I come back for a pre-season, Martin will take over, and he told that I was one of the masseuses because I was about 8 kilos overweight.
Well, you never knew you were a player.
That's a great start.
What did he say to you?
Listen, he was a straightforward, and that won't really work for me. That was Martin O'Neill, and you know, I had the chance. Obviously, we done a blip test. I think I've dropped in a level like 10 and a half, and he told that I was one of the masseuses doing a blip test with the boy just to get fit. It was funny, but then he said to me after a couple of sessions, he pulled me in. That time, I was obviously start speaking English. I started to learn. I understood that I need to get really quick into the language. So he was clear. He said to me, listen, I can see you've got ability. I'd like to give you a chance, but I need you to lose weight.
So did you know before you were overweight? Did you
know
you were?
I knew that. I knew that. I remember coming back.
The burger van.
I've come back. Yeah, well.
What was your order at the burger van?
That helped me to learn the language. I needed to find a way to learn that language. I didn't have the teacher. I didn't have English lessons. Everything I needed to do is myself. I would have gone 2 or 3 times in the cinema. I would sit down. You know, you get different phrases, how are you? There will be an answering that I'll come back in the next day and I'll use it and I'll see the response from the boys. That's how you start. You just need to adjust. Mm-hmm. Then my friend, he had a burger van and obviously he said to me, well, I'll get you there and, you know, you see how people order. Some people are polite, some are a bit rude, but, you know, you get the both sides.
Uh-huh. But the problem is you were eating all the burgers,
No. I've come back really heavy from that pre-season, and I remember Jim Henry was a fitness coach, and I've come back about 4 days earlier. We were doing a run upstairs in the gym. He said, Stan, did you put weight? He said, no, Jim, I've been working in the gym. But he go, are you sure about it? I think you've put a bit of weight, and I keep going, no. I've done a lot of wet leg works and that, and he measured my, I was at 8 kilos over, and I was like something like 4.5% body fat on the top of it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster. But you know what? Matt and you said to me, you've got 6 weeks to get it right. You know, for this 6 weeks, I managed to lose them. I was living only in salad. Mm-hmm. Imagine that, all the boys can eat in pre-season double sessions. And I need to do it. And you know what? That's where you get the trust of the manager. That's where you know who you're working for. The sooner I get that, Martin, you looked at my contract and say, this contract is, you know, it's not good enough. We're going to change it.
Right.
Soon you see that, there was no way back for me.
See, just the last bit on John Barnes, obviously Viduka, you said, kind of took you under his wing. What was that night like when him and you refused to go on? Come on, Stan, tell us.
Listen, he was funny. I remember sitting beside Mark and they asked him to come on. And Mark just looked at his buzz, looked at him and went, no. Nah.
Really, huh?
Honestly, the coolest man ever. And you know what? It wasn't a second invitation. John knew that he won't go across Mark. Mark was he was a straightforward, no. Nah. And that was it.
Was he there?
That was never spoken at. Then Mark was like, you know, next day you'll come back training. He's like, Mark is Mark.
And what, you've forgotten about her?
No, obviously John knew where he's standing. He's been a player, he knew there's already a problem there with Mark. Mark will come, he'll be outstanding in training again, and he's like, you act like nothing happened. You'll just move on. You know, if it was me, I'll be, you know, I would have gone. Worrying, you know, you would have gone and apologised. You're going to have some approach. Mark was a stone. His face was like, nothing happened.
Really? See, Viduka, how good, obviously he played with Larson, Sutton. How good was Viduka compared to this?
Mark was outstanding for a big centre forward, you know, speed and skills. He was unbelievable. He's one of the best I've played with. And, you know, I would love to see, longer partnership with Henrik and Viduka.
Oh,
that would have been incredible. Mm-hmm. Because he was so clever. His knowledge about football and the way he was playing, the power he had, you know, to pin players and to do one-on-ones and to score goals, he was second to none.
He had a top career, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just on Martin O'Neill there, as you said, he affected you personally. Was he like that with every player? Was it his man management? Was that such a relief after the way John Barnes was?
Yeah, it was a big relief for me. It was the belief and the trust that he actually put in me again. And it's very important for players, that. I think Martin treated that with everyone. I think Martin is what that kind of manager that if you work hard, if you show dedication, if you show that you'll be part of the team, play or not play, you always have a chance to play in my team and be part of my team, which is very important.
Mm-hmm. See, when he started signing guys like Lenny, was it a worry there for yourself, a young midfielder? You think, I might not get a game here?
Yeah, of course. Signing Lenny is like... The team won't be good looking again. That's right. No, but all the players that you brought, strong characters, mm-hmm. players that went through a lot in their careers, they've achieved a lot. They were winners, which is the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Could you see the standard rise?
Straight away in training. You know, losing ball in training, it was unacceptable.
Yeah, scary.
You know, Paul Lambert, Neil Lennon, Henrik Larsson, you know, to get the chance to play to Henrik's feet or play behind for him if he makes the run, if you don't play, he's on you. So you know that you need to be at your best. If you don't do something right, you need to stay after training and do it, you know. If you know that when you play 1-2 with Henrik, you expect you to put in a net. He expect you to score because that's his involvement in the game. He'll bring you into the game, but you need to be there. If you make that run in a channel and clear space for you, you need to be there. If you're not there, you look at you. You need to be there.
Wow, scary, eh?
This is the demand from these players.
We felt like that as young players, we all use as well.
Yeah, but we've learned. And that's the way Celtic play, you know. That's people say, it's easier to come and play for that. You know how hard is it? The demand to win every single game, to win every single session, to act in a proper way at a big club, is a big demand.
See, Lennon and Lambert, who played the midfield, would they help you? Would they give you wee pointers?
Lambert was brilliant. Lenny was more quiet. Lenny will talk when he needs to talk. But in the game, he was brilliant. We knew a lot of people, you know, asking questions about that, but you knew how important he is. If we counter-attack, you know, we controlling the ball and the play breaks, we know that Lenny's there. He covers, he's organised, he makes sure that two defenders are closer to each other. They make if one fullback goes, the other one's there. This is a people that you appreciate in a team. Mm-hmm. And when you have somebody like that, you've got a free mind, but, you know, when you lose the ball, I need to get back. He'll give me short time to get back, but I need to make sure I'm there. And when you know that, we knew each other inside out. Yeah. We knew what Alan Thompson's good, what Didier's good at, what Chris and Henrik, how they play, how they want the ball. If we're in the pressure, if we play a long ball, who need to support? Would they hold it for us? They'll get win. If they get us a free kick, we need to take a breather. You know, they'll make sure they'll give us a few pointers. I was the youngest one. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the youngest one. So to learn from them, you know, I need to pass, you know, letting that everybody else that, you know, you and Sean and John Kennedy, Steve McManus, you know, so many.
Just under, you said Lambo there. Was it off the pitch as well, Lambo helped you?
Yeah, he did. You know, he always made sure that I'm okay. That it, you know, at the start was very difficult to communicate, but he always made the effort. He was a captain, you know, he was there. Tom Boyd was there. But it was very difficult to understand Boyd, to be honest. But, you know, I could hardly understand English, but to understand Boyd is very difficult. Yeah, yeah. But Lambo always tried. He always made sure that you at least you say good morning, everything okay, you know. Little things like that, mm-hmm. which makes a difference.
Yeah.
Make a difference. And in training and in the games as well.
Obviously, you said that mentality in training and games that they were winners, but it was a carry on all the time, wasn't it? How much was that doing to big guys like Big Sutty?
listen, it's good to, you know, we being in a team like that, the demands are high, and boys, they could take a banter, you know that. But Sutty, he was a big character in our team. I remember Sutty would go before every game and say, oh, bloody hell, we'll get beat 5. Sutty, we're not going to get beat 5. Yeah, we should. Training is shit stuff, honestly. And then he will go, we'll win a 4-5-0, and you just come back in the bus and say, I told you we got on. He said, we got lucky. And he'll go for full season, every game. I remember John Robertson will sit for us with coffee and we'll play, say, Rangers and that, and say, we'll get beat 4-5 today. With shit. And Rob will just have a go at him and say, Sonny, I'm not coming for a coffee anymore. You know what? Out of all that, he'd just get off and go.
Brilliant, eh?
Hilarious.
Amazing. Him and Tomo were good together, weren't they?
Very good. Very good. They like one, you know, each other. But the two characters that push everybody else, the demand, the desire to win, you know, Tomo is one of these aggressive ones. He likes to be on the top of people. He will say what he thinks, and you need people like that. In a strong dressing room, you need people like that, and he was one of them.
It's a great upbringing for you, isn't it? But even guys like John Robertson and Steve Alford, they loved a laugh in that as well, didn't they?
Oh, they were part of it. And that's why Martin had a great balance in his team, you know. Wally and Robbo, you know, they knew their roles. They knew what they need to do. They knew how to adapt. They knew how important is the team spirit, and they managed to do that.
Uh-huh. But see, all the players with the big personalities, were they all scared of Martin, aren't they?
I don't think we were scared of it. I think we had a great respect for the manager. I think Martin knew our boundaries. We knew our boundaries. We knew how far we can go with Martin. We can have a joke, but we know we could what our limits are. And when we couldn't see him with many of the sessions, if he's there, he's very quiet. But I'll tell you what, when he raises his voice, you know he's there. And then straight away you go, okay, we're doing something wrong.
Brilliant.
And that was important. Because sometimes, you know, I've played under a lot of managers, they'll come and they'll be every day and they'll be speaking with you, they'll doing the coaching and that. And all of a sudden, some months you go, oh, we're tired. You don't got the same reaction, the same respect. You know, Martin was completely different. He'll be away. Sometimes we won't hear it for a week. And all of a sudden you walk in, you'll name the 11, you'll give his points, you're gonna be okay. We're in here. We know what we need to do. Half time, if you now have a pop at you, you have a pop at you, say, that's it, we need to raise even more. When you don't hear him for a week and all of a sudden he step in, and you know he's the man in charge, makes a massive difference.
Uh-huh, brilliant. I'm just going to go into the season 2000-2001. You beat Rangers 6-2.
Yeah.
You remember that game?
Yeah, of course I remember that. I think I scored in that game.
You did? How was that feeling scoring in an Old Firm game?
Listen, it was good. I think it was the first game for Martin O'Neill. That was the start of actually dominating Rangers, if I can say. Martin was very clear. I remember the talk before the game. He say, this team will achieve special things. And it starts today, boys. It starts today in front of all this. All is there. It's full and waiting for a performance. And you're there to show it to them. And you know what? He couldn't have not started better. Mm-hmm. He just went 1, 2, 3. He just went for it. You know, that's how our journey started, all together as a team, as a being part of this great club. He started that special result.
See, after that result, did that give you confidence to think we can dominate now?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, beating your rivals 6-2 and dominating and scoring great goals. Actually, we played very well as well. You know, I remember at that time Bobby Petter was outstanding, you know, and people still didn't know about Bobby, you know, what to, and, you know, seeing players go from strength to strength and, you know, winning games is what it's all about, and it gives you confidence, give you that drive to go and achieve more and more. So it was a great start for us.
You say that Petter got better, Agat got better. Was that all down to Martin, or was it down to the other players bringing them on as well?
The challenge, we were challenging each other. We had a team that hated losing, not just games. Hated losing anything, cards, training, anything, drinking game. Nobody wanted to lose.
We just go together as well.
Of course. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you what, some big guys there. They can drink.
Who was the biggest drinker? Or you know.
There's a few.
A few wild ones. Just on Larsson, he came back for a broken leg and scored 53 goals that year. How good was he that season? But one of the best in Europe?
Yes, he was. He was a game changer. He was a game changer. He just, having, for us, having Henrik in the team was something special. Because if you get it back, we struggle many, many games. And that guy will just pop out with something special. You'll get out of jail. Big games, you always turn up. If he don't play in big games, you always see he's missing. You know, having somebody, he was a complete player. He knew the game inside out. He knew how to play. He knew when to drop, when to go long, when to hold it, when to play 1-2. He knew it in and out. He knew every single one, you know, you pass the ball, you know that next first thing that when you play to Tomo White, you know, he needs to be on his left foot because next thing he's crossing because Henrik will be in, or Sati will be in already because he dropped. In you out. And when you have player like that, it's just great.
Mm-hmm. Would he get treated differently for the rest, obviously, how good he was? Would he be Henrik, a wee leeway for Henrik now?
Henrik was in the same level as Martin. We had incredible respect for Henrik. Henrik was very quiet. Mm-hmm. Henrik was very quiet. He'll approach you in a very nice way, nice manner. You'll be so gentle with everyone, you know. You won't be any of this to have a pop. You'll get into a banter sometime, but you'll keep his distance because he was the king, you know.
He's a man.
And he knew that. He knew that he was well respected and he needed to maintain that respect.
Was he a hard worker?
But he's, you know, Henrik will never stop working for it. You know the thing, sometimes you see players that, like Henrik, who sometimes they can take the foot off the pedal, you know, off the gas and say, oh, you know what, I'll leave because I've scored 40 goals last season. No, he'll come back more hungrier. You'll practice, you'll get better, you'll demand more. When you have somebody like that, it makes it easier.
Brilliant.
You need to achieve the level he's trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. You got a treble that year. When did you start to think we can do this?
We knew that we had a big chance because of the group we had. We had a strong belief. I remember that season I missed the second part of the season because I broke my leg. Mm-hmm.
So you did
it. Yeah, and you know, watching the boys, the way they were strong, but the belief was there. The problem with our team is when we smelled a bit of blood, we knew that everybody else is weak. We know somebody's is weak. We'll go for it. And we'll go there until we achieve what we want to achieve. And he was good.
Would you just talk about the treble in the dressing room?
Sorry?
Would you just talk about doing the treble in the dressing room?
Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, people...
People say now, game by game, don't they?
No. You will be mentioning it. Boys, we're going for it. You know what? You'll take another 5 games, another 4 games, another 3 games. It's important. They'll be tough. They'll be tough. Grind the result. Half time, we'll go back and, you know, we'll be 1-0 down or something. But we knew we had enough firepower to get there. And we always did.
Brilliant, eh? It was in March you broke your leg, but you went on to get Player of the Year that year.
Yeah, it was a hard work for me, and I've learned a lot about it. Obviously, Henrik done it before me. You know, the main thing was having Henrik, you know, the way he come back, you know. I remember when he came back for a session after his treatment and when he broke his leg, he was outstanding. And I was like, bloody hell.
What, his first couple of training sessions back?
He looked like he's never been away. Wow. I remember first training he came back, we'd done like 8v8 games and he banged up 8 goals. It was like, never been. I remember one of the Tom crossed and he just jumped and he just headed it in, and we all thinking, this guy's been out for 6 months. He was straight in, and when you get somebody like that, it's brilliant. But we had a good doctor, good physios, good fitness coach. We help a lot. It's very important when you have an injury like that. It's very important, the recovery. And, you know, I've managed to work with one of the best.
So when you broke your leg, did Henrik help you through it? Would he give
you
a bit of
a... Of course, you would talk to me. You talk to me about the side effects, what I can expect. You know, sometimes I won't feel my knee because he said that'll take at least a year. I didn't feel it. Make sure that you do this, you do that. Make sure you work on your legs. You need to strengthen your quads. They need to be stronger now because you had the operation. So you give your little pointers.
So he's a brilliant football player, a doctor, a physio. Some man.
Yeah, great one.
But to get the player of the year after that wee homesick guy must have been some feeling.
Yeah, he was great.
Maybe pay the phone bill off after that. Yeah,
Well, I've managed to do that with my new contract. I've managed to sort that, you know. It was easier. It was easier, I'll put it that way. But yeah, it was a great achievement, you know, coming to another country and managed to win the young player of the year. It was a great achievement, you know. At that time, it was very, you know, people talking about, oh, the way you were playing, you could have gone for a player of the year. At that time, no chance. I mean, you had... Even in Rangers had some incredible players. Mm-hmm. Celtic had some incredible players. You end up City with 20 goals. You had Alan Thompson outstanding, Paul Lambert, you had Bobo, you had Johan, you had yours. You had so many. Mm-hmm. So it was very difficult, but to achieve that was brilliant.
See, winning the treble, how much more an achievement was it when you think how strong Rangers were at that time as well?
It made it even more special because we knew that the previous year's Rangers were strong. We knew what we opted against it, but we knew one thing, that we need to win every single game to make sure we win that league. And we had our strong minds on it, and we knew that every point we drop will cost us that league, and we were all determined to do that.
All right. 2001-2002. I wanted to ask you about the wee free kick you and Henrik had. Was that a training ground thing, or why did you not just let Bobo curl it over the wall?
No, Bobby. Bobby's not taking it.
The size 13,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we decided not to give it to Bobo. But no, we didn't work on it. He just came out first. I remember first time we done it, it was against Juventus.
That's what was my next question, wasn't
it? And when something worked, you just go on with it. After that, Henrik said, we'll do it again, and we do it again, and we do it. But you know what? It was a perfect timing because... One thing he's saying to you, you make your run, I'll time it. So when you're on your stride, you're going to have more power hitting that ball. And you know, he was timing it perfectly every time.
He's amazing,
you know,
isn't he?
A few times I ask him, how do you time? He said, well, I'm watching your stride, so I know when to push the ball. So you don't give the wall to come out, so that give you enough space to hit the ball, to have enough, you know, good angle, which is, people don't think that way.
No.
And he would think of that. It wasn't from the training out. It just worked for both of us, and we just kept using it.
So you were free kicks and stuff like that. Would Martin O'Neill give you that freedom? Just go and do it yourselves, or?
No. Well, listen. When you had Lubo and Tomo, Henrik, there you don't. You don't line up. I mean, Lubo. When we practice free kicks, he's one of the best one. He was one of the best one, and the other one was Nakamura.
Oh, brilliant, eh?
Yeah, I remember. When Nakamura signed, it was Goran Strachan. Mm-hmm. When Nakamura signed, first few days he was joining, and Gordon said to me, Stan, we're going to practice some free kicks. It was you and Nakamura and Aidan McGiddy. And we'll see who's going to start taking the free kicks. I know you've scored a couple, Aidan scored out. Obviously, we didn't know about Naka. So I remember we lining up, and Naka's hit 10 out of 10, top bin.
No way.
So Gordon just turned around and said, I'll take Naka's taking the free kicks from now on. Just walked off. You know what? We couldn't even say a word. Just left it there.
But see, the goal against Juventus, is that your first Champions League goal?
First, I think it was the first Champions League of Celtic.
Yeah, for Celtic.
Yeah. He was. I think we lost 3-2. I thought we deserved better. But, you know, it was a great first performance, especially against a team like Juventus.
I think they got a penalty at the end, which was very dodgy. How infuriating was that?
Yeah, we had a couple of penalties going against us, to be honest. But listen, it was a lesson learned for us. We really enjoyed it that night. I thought we did well. We deserve it more. But, you know, end of the day, he is what he is.
The following year was obviously the Seville run. How good a time was that to beat the club?
Oh, incredible. It was a great journey. It was, we went from strength to strength every game. I remember talking about with the boys after the Stuttgart game. I remember that City was sitting. Stuttgart had a great dressing room with like a big swimming pool, and we were all sitting having beer after that. Don't get mad, we nearly get knocked out. We lost 3-2. But you know, City was keep going. Okay, boys, you know, we've been lucky again. It will be fun. And then I remember Tomo saying, "We're going all the way, boys. Here, we're going to get to that final." And we're like, "Ah, Tomo, is you know, a few more games." Say, "I'll tell you what, we'll get there." And every game, he just got harder and harder and harder. But you know what? We battled, we grinded the result. We need to go, and you know, in Portugal and Spain against Celta Vigo again, Boa Vista, to get important goals and not concede it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very difficult. They had good teams at that time. We managed to do it. And that just shows you the character and the spirit we had in that team.
And would Martin be the same? Would he think we can do it?
Martin never talked about what we could have achieved, actually. Martin will never mention how you just concentrate about the games, you concentrate about picking the teams. Well, for him, was we basically play the same team.
Right? Uh-huh.
Yeah. But Martin was never, Rob won't mention it. He was panicking and, you know, Sooty making those comments. He didn't make him confident. But, you know, Wally was easygoing. But nobody really from the manager's side will mention, you know, how far we can go. And they just played, like you say before, game for game. But for us, we felt that we could get that far.
If you had to pick one night for that run that you'll always remember, what would it be?
Liverpool away.
Brilliant. Big John?
He's not Big John. I think he's the builder. I think Liverpool had a very, very strong team. I remember the game before. I remember Paul Lambert made it very clear to us what me, Lenny and him, what we needed to do. You know, they had a midfielder, Danny Murphy, Hammer and Stevie Gerrard. So I remember that as Lambert just pulling us aside and said, "Listen, boys, midfielder will be big one today. We're just going to go man for man." So I remember he's giving, you know what? And that's where you show your captain. He give Lenny Danny Murphy, he give Dieter Hamann to me, and he said, "I'll take Stevie G."
Wow.
And we need to go man for man there. If we stop them playing, we've got a chance. And you know what? We never give him a kick. We knew what they're doing. We want them to, you know, just to go to Heskey and Owen, because we knew Bobo, you know, he was so powerful. He was playing out of his skins, you know, and nobody could outrun him. Nobody could outdo him. He'll win every header. So we were happy to leave, you know, them two against us back three, mm-hmm. you know, and they were brilliant. And, you know, we stick with the plan. Lambo come out great with it and, you know, he worked for us.
Brilliant. And the final itself, how annoying was the way Porto players acted towards end of the game?
He was well expected, to be honest. Matt and he warned us from the start. I think we could have, me myself, I could have done better. I thought that was my poor performances from the journey to Seville. But I found it very difficult, you know, the heat and everything. I wasn't my best. I remember having Manish on my back all the time. I just couldn't shake him. I couldn't find the space. But you know what? Henry kept us in that game. And I thought we should have, if Bobo wasn't sent off, I think we could have gone to the penalties, and you never know what could have happened. But it was a painful night. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, it was a painful night, but you know, it was an incredible journey.
Were you aware of Tomo's cushion Mourinho at halftime? He told us on here that he'd done it. You remember it?
I remember it, yeah.
Was it a big thing in the
tunnel? Yeah, it was a massive thing.
That team were always fighting too, weren't they?
Yeah, we always fight in the tunnel. You know what, we were never scared because we have such a big guys, you know, we have to, you know, Bobo and John and Jochen and yours. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to fight, they're happy with it. Just going to hide behind Bobo.
See, just on the fans in Seville, were you aware how big they were?
Yeah, they were just amazing. You know, we stayed outside Seville, so we until we got to the ground, we didn't really knew about it. You know, social media wasn't that big
back then,
at that time. You know, we didn't know, but the soon we started hitting Seville, oh my God, the waves are green and white. It was unbelievable. You know, before that, we were quite calm. We were good. We were ready for the game. We knew what we needed to do. But you know what? Getting closer to that stadium, seeing the waves, the sea of green and white, you actually start to get, you know, a little bit anxious. You'll be nervous, you know, oh my God, what's happening here? We didn't expect that. You know, seeing 20,000 outside the stadium, you know, it was incredible.
The final day of that season, that team obviously lost the league. How disappointing for a team like that not to win any in that year?
He was disappointing, but that just showed you the competition between Celtic and Rangers that time. And we lost it by a goal, mm-hmm. that if I remember. Yeah. We lost it by a goal, and it was painful. Losing the UEFA Cup and the league in the same week, it was painful. Yeah. And we had outstanding season. We had outstanding season, outstanding run for the UEFA Cup competition. We end up without nothing. That was the most painful to accept it. But, you know, made us stronger to go next year.
I just want to ask you, we're talking about fighting the tunnel with Bobo and that. Did you know get second prizes off Bobo one day in the dressing room?
I've got a few fights with Bobo.
What was your favourite?
My favourite is when we upset Bobo. He went for me. Sooty and Tomo tried to stop him. He just pushed them aside in their lockers, inside their lockers, broke the door from Chris' locker. I remember Jim Henry and John Roberts had tried to stop him as well. He flung them over the massage beds as well. At that time, I was looking for scissors, just ready to stab Bobo. but this is a moment that, you know, this is the moments that actually kept us. We were so demanding. We hated losing. We hated being second best. And we had a lot of arguments. We had a lot of, things in the dressing room, but that drove us to be successful. But you know what? The next day, everybody forget about it because for the cause of winning.
So the year after that, 2004, 2005, absolutely scooshed the league. Was the season before in the back of your mind to go and do it?
Of course. It made our desire to go and win it even better. I think we kind of ran away with it because we were that angry from the previous season. We knew what we need to do. We couldn't wait to get back on a pre-season. We couldn't go to get out and play Rangers again because we lost it by one goal. We lost the UEFA Cup final. It was painful. And what I've been saying so far, the boys in the dressing room, they didn't like losing. Mm-hmm. So we need to put right. We need to make sure we'll get things right. And we've done it, and we've done it in style.
Just want to ask you on Martin O'Neill. Did you know he was going to leave before he left?
No.
No idea?
No. Martin was very... He kept everything to himself. That's why he was well-respected. He won't share, he won't... You know, you speak with the boys, you'll be approachable, but, you know, things like that, you wouldn't know. And it was sad to see because as a players, as a team, we had a special bonding, to be honest, together.
Mm-hmm. Were you gutted when he left?
Sorry?
Were you gutted?
Of course. When you see a manager like that with the moments you had together, you've always had to see, but you need to move on. Mm-hmm. You need to move on. The next manager took over and you need to still, you play for one of the biggest clubs in the world and you need to adjust, you need to amend, and you need to just go on and win again.
Stan, top man. Thanks.
Great. Great talking to you, always.
Brilliant.